Sir. His father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, "O my son, indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the aggrieved father." Purport. The institution of Varna and Ashrama prescribes many regulative duties to be observed by its followers. Such duties enjoin that a candidate willing to study the Vedas must approach a bona fide spiritual master and request acceptance as his disciple. The sacred thread is a sign of those who are competent to study the Vedas from the Acharya, or the bona fide spiritual master. Sri Sukadeva Goswami did not undergo such purificatory ceremonies because he was a liberated soul from his very birth. Generally, a man is born as an ordinary being, and by the purificatory process, he is born for the second time. When he sees a new light and seeks direction for spiritual progress, he approaches a spiritual master for instruction in the Vedas. The spiritual master accepts only the sincere inquirer as his disciple and gives him the sacred thread. In this way, a man becomes twice born, or dvija. After qualifying as a dvija, one may study the Vedas, and after becoming well-versed in the Vedas, one becomes a vipra. A vipra, qualified brahmana, thus realizes the absolute truth and makes further progress in spiritual life until he reaches the Vaishnava stage. The Vaishnava stage is the postgraduate status of a brahmana. A progressive brahmana must necessarily become a Vaishnava, for a Vaishnava is a self-realized learned brahmana. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a Vaishnava from the beginning. Therefore, there was no need for him to undergo all the processes of the Varnashram Institute. Ultimately, the aim of Varnashram Dharma is to turn a crude man into a pure devotee of the Lord, or a Vaishnava. Anyone, therefore, who becomes a Vaishnava accepted by the first-class Vaishnava, or Uttamadakari Vaishnava, is already considered a Brahmana, regardless of his birth or past deeds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this principle and recognized Srila Haridas Thakur as the Acharya of the Holy Name, although Thakur Haridas appeared in the Mohammedan family. In conclusion, Srila Sukadeva Goswami was born a Vaishnava, and therefore Brahmanism was included in him. He did not have to undergo any ceremonies. Any low-born person, be he a Kirata, Puna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pukasha, Abhira, Sumpa, Yavana, Kasha, or even lower, note the even lower, can be delivered to the highest transcendental position by the mercy of Vaishnavas. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was the spiritual master of Sri Suta Goswami, who therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto Srila Sukadeva Goswami before he begins his answers to the questions of the sages at Naimushala. So then this is the invocation, the beginning of the invocation of Suta Goswami's discussions now. It means he has been requested by the sages to speak. And so now the speaking has begun. They have asked questions. Now based on those questions, then there will be discussion. So this is the important aspect, is that that desire to know, that inquisitiveness is there. It's already inherent. So because of this, then we see that Suta Goswami will speak. Also we see is that Sukadeva Goswami, he spoke because Pariksit Maharaj had questions. So if there's no questions, then what will be spoken? One could speak on anything. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is so broad that unless there's a question, what will be spoken? So what's necessary is that inherent desire to know on the part of those who are going to hear. They don't want to know, not much can be spoken. Because we're dealing with the chit potency, so depending upon the desire of those who want to hear, then we see that something can be spoken. Of course, there is the mercy of the devotees that even though maybe people aren't so inclined, things may be spoken beyond their desire. But the main principle is because there is desire, then there is something to speak on. Right? It means hearing, then chanting. It means chanting. Yeah, hearing, then chanting. So if there's no one interested in hearing, then there's no need to chant. Right? This is the principle. So sometimes you may feel the class was not inspiring, but that could also be because Krishna didn't reveal much because the audience was uninspired. The general principle is we always like to put anything that doesn't meet our approval on somebody else. But the actual principle is that relationship means two. Prabhupada made the book Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. If there's not perfect questions, you don't get perfect answers. Why one will bother? Someone who can speak perfectly will not speak because the question is not perfect. In fact, in the Vedas, it forbids answering a nonsense question. Right? So if there's only one person there, and speak some stupid question, one is under no obligation to answer. Because what is the use? One may say, no, no, but he asked. But what is his right to ask? Right? We want to speak rights. Yes, let us discuss rights. Rights means you have a qualification that you deserve something. Right? Something is there. Some are inherent, some are earned. So gaining knowledge is a earned right. It's not inherent. Because someone in the human form does not become human until they inquire. Before that, they're an animal. Is there any obligation we have to go out and explain the philosophy to the cows? Right? Or the birds, or the dogs? No. No one will ever say, even the most liberal person will not claim that the cows have their inherent rights to hear the explanation of the Vedanta Sutra. No. Because they're animals. So even though someone is born in the human form, until they inquire, they're animals. There's no obligation to answer their question. They may feel it is, but that's because they are materialists and the question they've asked is material. So as a materialist, yes, they can expect an answer. But unfortunately, or fortunate, whatever, both, they have approached a spiritual person who can give a spiritual answer. So being unable to tell the difference between material and spiritual, they have asked this question. So that's why it's forbidden. But here we see the sages, they are not of this standard. They have great qualifications. So their questions are beneficial not only for themselves, but for everyone. That shows a good question. If the question is only for oneself, it's very nice. But one has to ask why you would ask that. Right? Means, if the question is not good for others, how will it actually be good for you? Right? Because ourselves, we are just controlled by the modes of nature. And as we are controlled by the modes of nature, it's nothing special, it's nothing unique. Right? You can take something to eat and put it out in the courtyard here, and you can bring every dog in the world of every species. They'll all do exactly the same thing. They'll all go over there and eat that prasad. Right? So, by ego, we consider ourselves extremely unique and special. This is called Maya. Conditioned nature is conditioned nature. It's already been established by someone else. We just buy into it, that's all. Nothing special, nothing unique. Therefore, that in that position, then the question that is asked is beneficial for everyone. Of course, it's common that we always want to try to get, you know, very special instruction just for ourselves because we are so unique in the whole universe that no one's the same, that no one would be able to understand, no one would be able to apply, you know, no one this, no one that, and I like this, it goes on. But factually, if it's beneficial, it's beneficial for everyone. And we see is that ability to be able to discuss personal needs in an open assembly in such a way that it doesn't take over it doesn't change the mood to the person who's asking the question, but enhances that assembly, we see it actually takes advancement, takes purity. Arjuna, we may say, no, but it's personal, I'll feel embarrassed. Right? What do you think? Arjuna's not feeling the questions he asks wouldn't be considered embarrassing. If you had the same questions, go, look at the Gita, look at the questions. If you had that question, would you ask it publicly or would you want a private discussion? But he's able to ask it publicly. Not only publicly, in a battlefield, in front of his enemies. Because the answer is beneficial for everyone. So this is expertise, how to word the question so that it's beneficial for everyone and can be discussed in an open assembly, though it may be seemingly a private point. But our ability to apply it is the same as everyone else. it's not going to be different. We take a detail in our life as something unique, but the principle on which it's based is the same as everyone else. Right? As we've discussed in the astrological science, factually, there's only 10 questions that anyone ever asks to an astrologer. Right? You think about it. Something to do with money, some problem. Then money means you need money now, you need it later, you need more, you need less, but it's still, it's just money. Right? You need some facility. Right? There's something to do with relatives, either enhancing it or there's a problem. Right? Something with friends, something with your occupation. You think about it. Even, you know, 10 stretching it. Marriage, yes. So that's it. And then 10 has 10 finer divisions. So you get 108. And if you really want to go into detail, then each of those has 10, you get 1,008. But it's based on 10. Right? You can ask any astrologer, you know, unique questions come up, right? No. Right? Say, money, marriage, problems, right? Anything else? Huh? Moksha, some ask for moksha, okay. You know, what are we checking out of here? You know, but that's about it. So, this is an important thing, as you see, as these sages are able to ask these questions, and therefore you have such a great or special assembly. This assembly then becomes something unique, because what is being discussed is for the benefit of all. It's not because they're just, you know, very philanthropic. No, it's a matter of they know what's good for one person is good for all persons of this transcendental. Because the same, how to improve one's chanting, how to disentangle oneself from the material energy, it's all improved, it's beneficial for everyone. So, because it is that assembly, then we see Sukha Goswami is inspired to speak. And so here first then he's offering his respectful obeisances unto the spiritual master. So in here is because that is the connection. Without that, it doesn't function. Sometimes we may take it lightly, but we have to see it both. There is the personal relationship, you know, that has the emotional exchange. But then there's also the point of tattva, of knowledge, is that we cannot be connected to transcendence except through the spiritual master. No ifs, no ands, no buts. It doesn't work any other way, because that's not how God wants to be approached. God establishes religion. It works that way. Whatever we may think, whatever anyone else thinks. It's, you put together thousands of fools, they may proclaim something, it doesn't matter, because it's not truth. Like that. And they're fools, but more foolish is the person who then propounds what the foolish person said. Right? An act that is improper, then it may be approved by some fools, but they get no reaction. But the person who propounds that foolishness, whatever is 100 times the reaction of that activity, they get, even though they didn't do it. That's what Krishna says. You know, so one should not doubt this. That's why we would see Srila Prabhupada, the Acharyas, would get so upset by propounding bogus philosophy. Because that propounding, then so many people are disturbed. Why would that one person get 100 times? Because it's going to affect so many other people that may take it up and they will be affected by it. So propounding improper philosophy or ideals is considered the worst. So here we see is that Sukadeva Goswami, he is perfectly bona fide. What he says is perfect. And he is actually beyond the system, the mundane system of varna and ashram, in that the perfection of varna ashram is already within him. Prabhupada points out that in the varna ashram system, then there's purificatory rites, and those rites are to bring one to a better position in which one can make a better Krishna conscious decision. Right? Means human life means decisions. So human life means to make a decision you have to be educated. To be educated you can't be in ignorance. Because if you're in ignorance, then when you hear even the truth, you may not be able to understand it. You may misapply it. You won't use it properly. So therefore, those who are purified, they learn the knowledge, because then they will use the knowledge for what the knowledge is supposed to be used for. Otherwise, they'll use it improperly. They'll use it in the wrong way. So it's a very important thing. So knowledge, we also have to remember, is a person. Right? Knowledge is a person. And so she doesn't want to be dealt with improperly. Therefore, she should not be given to people who aren't proper. So that is the principle. But here, Sukadev, he can perfectly give this knowledge because he's beyond this conditioning in which he will use it improperly. And those who are conditioned then follow the rituals of samskara to purify themselves so they will have the proper intelligence to make the proper decisions. So that's why it's used, the Vedic system uses this, to simply assist in becoming God conscious. Because there's no other purpose to the varna ashram system. It's only there to help become God conscious. So Prabhupada mentions is that the Brahmin, undergoes these rites, then he becomes Dvija. Dvija means twice born. Now he is fit to actually practice human life. Because until one inquires, one's an animal. But we hear this all the time. Is education is going on for the children. And very rare we hear questions that actually deal with, are the children being trained in transcendence? Will they actually become devotees? Will they advance in spiritual life? Questions are always concerning their health, their diet, their sleep, their further economic development, whether they'll be able to move in the material world and perfect their eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. It is rare I've ever heard a parent ask any question other than this. So that was what Prabhupada was trying to save us from. He was trying to give us human life and human education. So that means going beyond eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Of course, those things must be there. But what there is more. Human life begins with the Tato Brahma Jigyasa. It doesn't begin with anything else. So the Shastras say that the first birth is animal birth. One is given birth to an animal. Now this animal has all potential to become human. That's the uniqueness of the human birth. Is that that form you can actually become human. If you're born in any of the other species of life, that potential is not there. So one can't become human. If you're born in the dog or cat or, you know, bird or fish, you can't become human. In the human form, then you have the potential to become human. But until they inquire, they're not human. That's the bottom line. So if the discussion, the interest is only eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then they're animals. Maybe nice animals, pleasant animals, sophisticated animals, gentle animals, considerate animals. You know, so many nice descriptions you can give to that they're a nicer animal than others, but animals nonetheless. So human life begins with this Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That's where it starts. Before that, no. One devotee once mentioned that, oh, so Prabhupada, do we get the benefit of making devotees because we have conceived and given birth to a child in a devotee family? So then they are devotees. And Prabhupada said, no. He said when they turn 16, because that's when you're an adult, and they themselves are personally committed to being devotees, then you get the credit. Otherwise, no. So that's when you see, when they're small, they're cute, you dress them up, they look like nice devotees, you know, like, oh, Haribol, or JJ, you know, it's nice. But when they're 16, and they're devotees, then you get the credit. Otherwise, you gave birth to an animal like every other species, cats, dogs, they all gave birth to animals. Right? And you simply, the cat and dog trains their children how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend like a cat or dog, and you train them how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend, you know, similar like the human form. That's it. No more. You get some interaction, you get some emotional support, you get what you want out of the relationship. But the question is are they getting what Krishna wants out of that relationship? To train a human being how to serve Krishna and go back to Godhead. That must be seen. Right? That's the foremost. If that's in place, then one's endeavors to see that they're nicely taken care of have value. They have meaning. But if they're perfectly taken care of, but they don't become human, what's the use? Shrama evi kevalam. Simply a waste of time. Nice, maybe it was good for your emotions. Great. Then next life? Then what? Then what do you do? You have to start all over again. So all that endeavor didn't have any eternal eternality to it. So, therefore, Dvija means a human being. So Brahman platform means a human who is inquiring. So of course, if one takes up the devotional process, one has become human. But one has to remember, the adults have taken that step. And the kids, just because they belong to us, doesn't mean they've taken that step. Right? The natural thing is what I do, then they do, and so therefore what I'm thinking, they're thinking. No, they're a separate living entity. What you're thinking, what they're thinking are two different things. Right? Like that. So, it's very different. So one has to see that they will do, they'll imitate, they'll copy. If they like you, they'll imitate you. If they don't like you, they won't. Unless it's just easier. It's less trouble to imitate than to not. But you'll see, what do they do when they hit in their teens? Then if they're doing devotional service, yes. Then they've committed. If they're not, then it's another story. So, therefore, Prabhupada's making this point is that's what's essential. Of course, in this, because of the delicateness of the emotions, then naturally go, but then we always say we always neglect, we always forget, we always, no. Point is being made is that if this is not in place, why would you even do it? Why would a devotee want to go through so much mundane trouble if it's not going to get a spiritual result? Right? Why would you do it? Right? We wouldn't do that. Would we go into the kitchen, get the finest ingredients, spend days cooking some special preparation, and after we finish preparing it, take it out and, you know, throw it out in the courtyard and have the dogs eat it? Right? We don't offer it. No, but just thought, you know, only the humans are getting nice things to eat. Why couldn't the dogs get nice, you know? They also like saffron and cashews and pistachios. No, everyone would say this person is a fool. But if they go to all the endeavor to put together huge amounts of money, facility, resources, time, energy to raise an animal, everyone will say, yes, this is very glorious. But for the devotee, for the materialist, yes, for the devotee, unless it's offered to Krishna and Krishna accepts, what is the use? No use. So that's why the emphasis is put there. Of course, those who are not well trained then may take only that point and neglect the other side, that people aren't properly taken care of. That is foolishness, because the conditioned nature has its needs in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. That has to be taken care of. But that's taken care of for the purpose of becoming self-realized. That's the point. Otherwise, we don't just see so many go along, they have their ideas, and then when the kids just walk out on them, leave the house, then they rationalize, you know, euphemize the thing. Well, you know, they have to learn on their own, you know, they got to make their own decisions in life, and, you know, I've heard many devotee parents say this. It's just, you know, then it's, yes, it's, you know, everyone's got to make their own decisions and all that. But when they were in the house, you know, they had all their own opinions and they're going to do this and that and so many things and they couldn't see the bigger picture. As soon as they go, oh, yes, you know, it's no responsibility. And others will say, oh, yes, very broad-minded parent. You know, it's easy to be broad-minded when you have absolutely no control or no say. Yes, yes, you know. Like Govinda Damo, right? Gopal Bhatt was carrying a basket of puffed rice. Popped rice, the koi. It's double popped, so it's very light. And as he's walking along, then a breeze blows, and what's on the top of the basket, right? Because Gopal Bhatt, you know, he's interested in eating, so he's filled his basket very full, right? So naturally the top is a little exposed or vulnerable, let's say. So the breeze blows and then some of the koi on the top blows off. And while it's blowing in the wind, before it hits the ground, then he goes, Govinda Namo. Right? This is for Govinda. I offer this to Govinda. Right? You know, so he's very intelligent, very fast, that he can offer it before it hit the ground. But that's Govinda's, right? So now Krishna's taking his part, right? You know, and then the rest is mine. So it's very easy. When it's lost, it's gone. Yes, then we become philosophical. This is called smarshan vairagya. It's gone. The person's gone. We're so attached. Now they're dead. And we're at the burning ghat. And then, yes, you know, material life is very temporary. And yes, we have to be serious and all this and that. Then the ritual's over. We all take our bath, a little salt, like that. We walk back to the house and that. And then again, it's, you know, hey, this, that, money, family, marriage, this, that. It goes on. Just smarshan vairagya. Nice. At least there was some vairagya sometime. But Prabhupada's trying to point out, why be so much controlled by the modes of nature? Why not become transcendental? So then that means, and to do that, then we first have to be inquired, we have to be human. Then the next is then, one becomes vipra. Vipra means one in knowledge. He has studied the scriptures, he has heard from authority, he has heard from the devotees, he has practiced it, and he becomes expert at it. He is able to apply the philosophy in his life. Right? That doesn't mean you have to be a great intellectual, it means that what you hear, you are able to apply and get benefit from. Then that is called vipra. Then the vipra then must progress further, because he then from that practice realizes the transcendence, and then he becomes devotee. So that's actually the position. So anyone who starts up accepting the Lord, then they are in a very good platform, the devotees. But still within that, the refinement is with knowledge, then they have to serve Krishna and come to that realized platform. then they're actually fully devotees. Because otherwise, we always have to remember is anyone who's practicing, we accept them as a devotee, as good as a devotee. So all the etiquettes and everything apply, but actually, we have to remember sadhana bhakti means aspiring devotee. That when you cross the platform of Brahma Bhuta, that's called devotee. And we take it to its ultimate definition. So we should never become proud. Oh, now I'm beyond this, we're already devotees. Yes, you can say we're beyond this when you've gone beyond your condition. Then it can be said. Otherwise, then there's still some work to do. Maybe devotees, but still, just like someone's born as a human form, they have all potential to become humans. So in the same way someone has taken up devotional service, they have all the potential to become pure unalloyed devotees. But first they have to do it. It's not enough. Just once born in the family of devotees, it's not enough. Otherwise then it's just caste Goswamis. They're born in Goswami family, so automatically they're Goswamis. So we're born in devotee family, so we're automatically devotees. But there has to be qualification. So Sukadeva Goswami then, because he is Vaishnava, he is transcendental, he automatically then has that Brahmanism in him. Because Brahman means one who knows Brahman. So he is interested in Brahman, so that's Dvija. He knows Brahman, that's Vipra, and he has realized Brahman, that's Vaishnava. So already, the other platforms are already included. So therefore we see he doesn't need to go through these ceremonies. And then, so Prabhupada gives here in conclusion that therefore any low-born person can come to the topmost platform by the association of devotees. That's the thing. Because actually the conditioned nature is not the thing. Because we identify with it, that's what holds us back. But the soul is free from that. Right? The soul is not held back. One identifies with the bodily platform, therefore, then one is subject to the actions and reactions and social status of that position, of that conditioned nature. Because it works like that. We didn't make it, right? Did you design your nose? No. Right? Maybe Michael Jackson designed his nose, but it's falling off. Right? But most other people's noses were, the modes of nature arranged for them, and they stay on their face quite nicely. Right? So, it's already there. And the kind of nose it is, if it's a nice nose, not a nice nose, if it works well, it doesn't work well, it smells nice, doesn't smell nice. Right? So, that's the thing, right? See, noses should smell, not run. And feet should run, not smell. Once you check whether one's built properly or improperly. If you're using high say, if your nose smells, your feet run, you're okay. But if your nose runs, your feet smell, you got a problem. Right? So you always have to see that it's proper. So that is the modes of nature. They've created this, right? They've created this situation. So then we identify with it, and because we identify special, therefore then we want it to work the way we want it to, but it's already been made, right? The manufacturer makes a hammer, the manufacturer makes a screwdriver. Hammer is for nails, screwdriver is for screws. Now of course, here in India I have seen them take screws and hammer them into the hammer, like that. I have seen that. So, therefore it appears that it can be done. But whether you get the full benefit out of the screw after it's been hammered in, that's another question. But, so that is the modern non-Vedic concept, is that even though we have the conditioned nature of a particular situation in both social and spiritual status in society, still I want something else. So that's a problem. So, and that's only a problem because we identify with it. Right? That's the thing. Those who don't care, don't care. What do they care? People like what you're doing, don't like what you're doing. What do you care? You can go on and do it. Right? So, but people who care and make all kinds of this, that, and hoo-ha about it, it's because they identify with it the most. Right? You find any group of persons who's fighting for positions and rights because they identify with that the most. And the problem is they can see that that position doesn't have, it's lacking some need that they have. That's embodied in another status of life. So therefore, then they fight to get that. So it's greed. It's lust. It's not that they are more liberal or more broad-minded or more sophisticated. No, they're just more attached, more identified with that greater false ego and less culture, less character. They want to take everybody's. So that's the business. And in doing so, they don't even get the benefit of enjoying their own facilities. Right? Many times you see that. You see kids. Two kids get something to eat. And there's something more that you could also get. Right? There's two portions they have, and there's a third portion. So who gets the third portion is the one who finishes the first portion first. Right? So then they will eat the first portion very quickly. They won't even taste it. Just to get that next portion, just because they have it. And then and there's an idea, I will enjoy more. But actually they enjoyed less. Okay, they got double the amount. But they didn't even notice it. So their only enjoyment is that I got it. I have it. But as far as taste goes, you know, it could have been anything. It could have been sawdust. But they wouldn't have noticed. So that's the point, is that one is fighting so much for something else, but what one actually has, one doesn't taste. And the only glory of getting the other thing is that you can say, I have it. But you can't enjoy that either. Because someone who can enjoy in any place. Someone who's satisfied is satisfied anywhere. Someone who's not satisfied is not satisfied anywhere. So that's the principle. See, it just doesn't work to do otherwise. So, therefore, only because we identify, these become a problem. And we stop identifying when we're liberated. Therefore, then, the methods are given how to engage a conditioned soul in the Lord's service so that they can go beyond, so that they can become transcendental. So, by the mercy of the devotees, then even the lowest born can go beyond, because they're not the lowest born. All it is a lower born generally means that their ego is bigger, so they have more to deal with to realize that they're not that. That's generally the principle. Though not always, because someone can identify with a higher birth or better position and become so proud of that they become an illusion also. It becomes clouded. So both aspects. But in general, it just means that they identify so much with those not nice qualities that therefore then they take up a lower birth. Low birth is mentioned because we have to remember low birth is human. So low birth comes from offenses in the mind. Offensive sinful thoughts create low birth. Right? If you perform sinful bodily action, you'll get the reaction in your body. If you perform activity, that comes in your speech, right? Therefore, you find a person who is addicted to sinful activities. They're very rough in their speech. And sinful thoughts in the mind then create low birth. Like that. That's how your reactions come in that way. So here, this just means that there's a lot of you know, thought or meditation on sinful life. So then you get these lowborn. And of course, then there's the idea, well, these are all tribals, so therefore it doesn't apply to us. That's why I said note the even lower. Because if you note the Kiratnas, Hunas, Andras, Bulindas, Pulkashas, Abhiras, Sumbas, Yavanas, and Kashas are all appearing in Asia. They're not appearing outside of Asia. So going outside of this means even lower. Right? Because Bharat Varsha is meant for humans. Outside the center of Bharat Varsha, that's meant for tribals. And outside that is meant for those who are lower than tribals. Right? Huh? Yeah. So that always should be kept in mind. And what you remember, sophistication is not something that makes one not a tribal. You know, just like you see animals, some animals very sophisticated, very sophisticated, very refined how they deal. You know, like an elephant. Well, it means generally they won't just eat one food. At least North Indian elephants, they have to have a variety there. Then they will eat nicely. So it's sophisticated, right? They don't sleep much, only a few hours a day. Any elephant sleeps 3 hours a day. Cows also sleep very little. So they're affected by goodness. They're refined. Like that. What they eat is refined things. They won't eat any old nonsense. But still an animal. So these kind of aspects, we're speaking these just so that the attachment to the idea we're refined. We see those who follow these Vedic principles sometimes are unrefined. Therefore, we're superior. But as we pointed out in the beginning, superior means human life. And human life doesn't mean sophistication. Human life means desire to know God, the desire to know who we are, how to cross beyond the material ocean and get to the transcendental realm to serve the Lord. That's human. Below that is just various degrees of sophisticated and unsophisticated animal life. Any questions or comments?
As the sages in Namasharanya, they seem to be presented as very saintly, elevated devotees, but at the same time, in the Gita, we have the four different types of pious persons or groups who approach Krishna. The sage of Namasharanya exemplified as in the group of the curious, which doesn't seem such an elevated stage. So how do you understand the two points?
Said that the sages of Namasharanya then are exemplified in the Gita as being those who are inquisitive, the jigyasu. And though they're presented as elevated, so it doesn't look to be very special. That's because of, well, I mean, a few things are there. One is we have to look at our definition of what is special. Because they're inquiring about transcendence, so that makes them human. So the fault sometimes we make is that whatever we see as higher and lower, like, you know, we see, okay, there's the Artha, Artharthi, Jigyasu, and Jnani. Four kinds of pious people that surrender to the Lord. Generally, and then we learn from that that the Jnani is top, the Jigyasu is less than that, the Artha, Artharthi are less than that. So naturally then we always put ourselves as a Jigyasu, I mean as a Jnani. I've heard by every devotee, yes, you know, I was looking, I was really, you know, always, you know, like that. It had nothing to do with the holiday, right? It was always my sincere, you know, looking for the absolute truth between, you know, dropping acid and having illicit sex and, you know, drinking my green tea at the restaurant and talking
Kant and other, you know, important things. So it's missed what is, we always have a tendency is that we put the top as normal because we're at that level and everything else is below that. Just like the common mistake devotees will make is, okay, there's Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So take, I'm Brahman, Brahman's normal, and Shudras are, you know, right off, low class, scum of the earth, disgusting, you know, like that. But actually, Shudras are human. So going, you know, from the non-Vedic, first class, first world tribals, they're light years ahead of them. You bring the most sophisticated Westerner who's not following Vedic principles or interested, they're animals. So a Shudra is a human. So Shudra is the common platform of human life. That's the common platform. Then amongst those, then you have some that are designated for the special qualities. Those who are able to generate economics. Those who are able to create administration. And those who are able to disseminate knowledge. But Shudra is the common platform. And anything that doesn't follow the Vedas is below that. And you take someone from, you know, Europe. Are they a Kirata? Who knows if they're from Hungary? But Andras are over here, Pulindas are over here, Pultashas, Amiras, Sumbas, that's, you know, over in Siberia. And then Yavanas, okay, that's Turkey. Kashas, that's over in China. So I didn't see, you know, Europeans mentioned here. So they must be in this category or even lower. So therefore, now then above them are these 12 tribes, traditional tribes, at least the traditionalists. And then above that, then we have a Shudra. Does that make sense? So therefore, we tend to put the Jnani as the normal and everything else is just right off. But the point is that the Jigyasu is one who wants to know. He has an interest in knowledge. So that means that generally, at least in their case, it establishes them as Brahmins. They want to know, and they're willing to practice it. Right? They're doing yajna, they're doing sadhana. They're not just armchair speculators. So they're approaching authorities. So then they're actually very special. The weakness of that position is having gained knowledge when they drop the process. Because one's only interested in knowledge, and then after that, then maybe they'll, you know, get, I just say, very deeply absorbed in, you know, the life cycle of a tsetse fly or something, you know. It's just, it's another thing to learn about, okay? So, you know, like that. So, you know, today's topic is God and tomorrow's topic is, you know, armadillos or something, you know. So it just moves. It doesn't matter. So that's the weakness of the jigyasu. But if we notice Jnani, then is one who wants to know the Lord as a person how to serve Him. So when devotees say, yes, I was interested in this and that, they were actually jigyasu. Because they didn't even know the Lord existed or who He was or how. Jnani means someone who knows the Vedic culture, knows the Vedic things, and then they see from that God is a person and we want to know Him and serve Him. So then that places them automatically on, they're situated as neophyte devotees. Well, the jivyasu is not, they're Brahmins, they're deepers. So then they can move forward from there and become Vaishnava. So it's a very special, so in the thing, that's a very special position, someone who wants to know. I mean, if you look in general in our movement, probably if you take most of the, you know, temple presence and the, you know, devotee has questions, wants to know, wants to study, it's not allowed. So even being a jigyasu is not allowed. It's considered a waste of time, right? You should just collect your money, do what you're told, bust, don't ask any questions. So it's very Orwellian, you know, the concept. So, therefore, it's a very elevated position just to be able to do that. That is cultivated, that is cultured, that this is a good thing to inquire and want to know why we have to do this. But then the point is that the person has to have an answer. If he doesn't have an answer, then, of course, the natural thing is just do what you're supposed to do. But that's how culture is lost. You ask the young person born in the Hindu family, you ask the elder, why do we do this? And the elder doesn't have any answer. All that he can say is, we've always done this. Okay? We've always done like that. It's a good thing to do. Okay, that's something. At least they know that that much is there. And to some degree they practice it, so that's okay. But because they don't have the knowledge, then the young people don't take it up. Unless they have a very strong emotional attachment with those people, then they'll follow it by imitation. So they just parrot, they don't know. So actually the thing is it has to be explained why everything is done. That means the leaders have to know why everything is done. So that's education. That's vipra. That's the principle. Otherwise, if it's not inquisitiveness, if that's not culture, it's not human life. Fortunately, the emotional process is not hindered by that. There's many examples of animals who have benefited going back to Godhead. Right? There's even Chaitanya Leela, there were seven trees who went back to Godhead. Of course, then, it was a common principle. Then there's also one dog, it means there's the dog who went with Shivananda Sen's dog, but there was also a puppy dog. But the one problem in that, depending on relying on that method, is that, you know, I can remain an animal and still go back to Godhead, is in all of them, there was the personal hand or touch of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu directly. He actually embraced the seven trees. He actually personally played with that puppy or personally, fed the dog. So it might be a little bit risky to, you know, place all your, you know, hopes on attaining pure devotional service on that, you know. So, therefore, then it's recommended that one comes to the proper platform. So, jigyasu is there. Because whoever joins Krishna consciousness, that's where they start. Right? It means you start at that. Because you see, most, where they get anxiety, the material world's driving them nuts. They can't handle it anymore. But that's artha. Right? That's artha. Like that. Or they come for some gain. Like the devotees who say Bombay. I think it was after a few years, I think it was either Sridhar Maharaj or Giriraj Maharaj, someone noticed that there was a pattern. They noticed sometime in like end of June that suddenly so many devotees came to the temple and they had a full temple, it was packed. Like that, everybody there enthusiastic, and then somewhere in like October, November, then slowly, then they all kind of disappear. And then, you know, this went on for years, and they were wondering. Until one day, somebody bumped into one of those devotees that had come during that time. In the street. They were a beggar in the street. And then they asked, hey, what are you doing here? Why are you not at the temple? And then in the discussion, it came out that hundreds of them would join because there's no place to stay out in the street. So, you know, you move into the temple for 4 months of the rainy season, you know, you get a place to stay, you get good food, some clothes. You know, you just have to do some work and tolerate the temple commander, you know, things like that. And then after it's all over, then yeah, now you go back out. And then they figured this out. Then, okay. Then they started to be a little more careful in choosing who to move in. But that's Artarti. They just see it as an advantage there. So they take up. Now in that, I'm sure many stayed and became serious devotees. Even though their original motive was that. So ultimately it doesn't matter because even the jnani, it's not enough because he wants to know God. But knowing God and loving God are two different things. God wants to be loved, not known. So even at some point, the jnani platform has to be given up. All it's saying is that all of them, because Jnani is in direct connection with the Lord, is the most saint. Jigyasu is knowledgeable, so therefore they can acquire it, so that's better than Ardharatarthi. But they have the thing is because it's knowledge, it may be any knowledge. And then the weakness of the Ardharatarthi we see is that, you know, they've been a devotee for a long time, life is, you know, peaceful and all that. And so the pains of the material world are gone. But then in that, then they, because that was their problem, is sensitivity to pain and disturbance. Then when it starts happening in the community of devotees, they become overly sensitive. So they leave the community of devotees. Because that was their whole thing, just to get rid of the pain. So then his problem is too political with devotees and this and that, the karmis are nicer, then they're out there with the karmis. And they go like this, pontificating for some time. And then you see a few years later, then they decided that, well, actually the karmis aren't any better than they were the last time we gave up their association to become a devotee. Right? Just that they're more expert at superficial, you know, social presentations. You know, and they're very serious about their economic development. So then, you know, it appeared that there was something there. But that's how many devotees leave for that. So that's hard. That. So you generally see that there's only a handful of devotees have left because of jigyasu. They're there. They're there, but they're a handful. Like that. You know, I don't think the vast confidence is very big. You know? Like that. So so we see it's something more special. Like that. Does that make some sense?
Also some higher practice like being a demigod. But the demigods also are like the best sense enjoyers, like the most sophisticated sense enjoyers. Srila Prabhupada said that the kids that take birth in the womb, sometimes they are demigods. Mm-hmm. Does it mean that they don't need any, they are already devotees because they're demigods? It's a misconception.
Means making the point is that one can take birth in higher births, so like something like demigods is also a higher birth. Because of that, then Prabhupada mentions that some are demigods and they take birth in devotee families. So does that mean that they don't have to become devotees? Demigods means neophyte. So to become a demigod means that the one was on the neophyte platform. That's what it means. Because otherwise, generally, madhyamas wouldn't become demigods. They would either just directly take birth in a family of devotees, or if they were distracted, then they would go to Janatapa Mahar lokas. They would go to those places. But demigods were there involved in the management and sense enjoyment in that. That means that someone had that inclination, so they would be neophyte. So they have to still then recognize that and progress. Because within the realm of the neophyte, you have Shraddha, Shraddha Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. So until they come to Bhajana Kriya, they're not actually well situated. So that means their ability, their faith and their ability in the Sadhu Sangha is not very developed. So still, they'd have to work on it quite a lot. So I guess we'll end here. Grantulat Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samadita Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Taito.
Holiness Bhaktivinoda Maharaj ki, Jai.